Thomas Edison, Man of the Millennium, Volume 2, Lifetime Partnerships. Written by Harry T. Roman. Narrated by Kat Lookabaugh. Introduction. Thomas Edison was unquestionably the world's greatest inventor, and in this series, I present you with a look at the man and what he did. I have engaged in hero worship of Edison for almost 60 years, since boyhood. As you will hear, I also have an ongoing history of lecturing and writing about the man. I bring all of this fascinating information to your doorstep, and I hope you enjoy my thoughts and observations. There are three volumes in this trilogy. Volume 1, The Man and His Legacy. Volume 2, Lifetime Partnerships. And Volume 3, Observations. Harry T. Roman. Camaraderie and creativity. Fun with the old man. If you worked for Edison and became good enough to be included in his inner circle of inventors and technicians, there certainly was ample opportunity to interact with the old man, as his staff called him. In fact, they called him the old man when he was only 24, even though most of his workers were older. By 31, he had completely revolutionized telegraphy, earning the respect of his peers in the industry, his workers, and telegraphic giants like Western Union. Edison was a tough act to follow. By 36 years of age, he was a millionaire. More than anything else, Edison enjoyed the male camaraderie in the workshop, sharing pranks, taking meals with the other guys, taking verbal shots at each other, and of course, working until the sun came up on new and exciting projects. He reveled in telling knee-slapping stories and singing little made-on-the-spot ditties, and sometimes ribald old songs. At his Menlo Park lab, he played an old organ, often at midnight, or at times in the early morning hours, to let out creative workplace tension and anxiety. Songfests and big midnight meals were quite common. So were catnaps in various corners, atop lab benches, or wherever conditions seemed to offer a comfortable respite for the mind and body. Edison's development of the modern-day R&D laboratory was perhaps his greatest invention, codifying how invention can be made a profitable process for all industries. Without a doubt, it has proven to be a way to perpetuate economic progress, fuel for our national economic engine. And since all major technology-based firms worldwide have R&D outfits, we can safely assume it is beneficial to civilization. Employers may not run the labs today the way Edison ran his, but the principles and goals are essentially unchanged from the poorly heated, badly lit, large wooden buildings that gave us the phonograph and the electric light. Magic happened there for sure, and the fire was the old man himself, the leader. Today, our business executives are fond of attending workshops to learn how to relieve stress, explore in-vogue leadership techniques, and practice ways to bond with employees in the workplace, hopefully to stimulate a sense of partnership in the work. Edison seemed to be able to do this intuitively and with great success. He was most definitely the pack leader. Edison's accomplishments told his story better than anyone else's words, official pronouncements, or collegiate diplomas could attest. What you saw in Edison's workshop was what you got from the man himself. He was tough on his boys, but he gave as good as he got, and usually Edison outworked them all. You don't learn such a work strategy today in a commercially offered course on leadership, in an air-conditioned atmosphere with nicely bound course notes over gourmet lunches and dinners. Old habits die hard. Edison's cozy boys' club at the lab led to a great deal of jealousy and consternation with his wives, probably causing them to wonder if he liked his workers better than his family, since he spent more time with them. His first wife, Mary, was especially hurt by Edison wanting to hang out with his cronies so much. His second wife, Mina, seemed to be better able to accept his tendencies, carving out her own place in the Edison panoply. Edison's irresistible creative urges tugged him in all sorts of directions, usually away from his family. Historians speculate that Edison's behavior with his boys harks back to his itinerant telegrapher days. As a teenager, he roamed alone around the country from Port Huron, Michigan to Tennessee and back again, searching for good-paying jobs and opportunities to practice his craft. He lived with pickup roommates and enjoyed the crude telegraph rooms and its employees' lively banter. Edison was not adept at social relationships and tended to annoy people with his antics and bold pronouncements. As he worked his way up the telegrapher pecking order, Edison's early jobs were the late-night shifts at lonely railroad outposts. This solitude afforded him spare time to think, dream, and inevitably try out some new ideas on readily available telegraphic equipment. On several occasions, Edison was fired for such behavior when one of his pranks or failed impromptu telegraphic experiments landed him in big trouble. However, this joyful experimentation fueled his mind. Ordinary teenagers might move on from these failed employments and carry nothing of it with them except perhaps a belly laugh and fond memories. Young Tom used the experience as fodder for future experiments. His lifelong philosophy was always the same: negative results are just as important as positive ones. Edison always seemed to be learning, even when people annoyed with him thought he was a buffoon. About this time, Edison began keeping his famous notes and notebooks. Edison's penchant for joking and impromptu wordplay was very evident in his youth, as well as in many of his fellow free-spirit telegrapher colleagues. In fact, some became his longtime friends and associates later as his career began to take off. One friend even introduced Edison to his second wife. A creative genius. Viscerally, Edison grasped the importance of creativity, the need to nurture it, and most importantly, step back from it when necessary. Many inventors I know believe in catnapping and doing some other creative exercises when the mind goes numb from overconcentration on the same problem. I myself prefer wordplay and humor, and I have used it extensively when stumped on inventive problems. Sometimes crafting a humorous story about what I am trying to do aids in breaking a mental logjam. The mind needs variety, and inventors seem to appreciate it. Most have their own little ways of dealing with creative blocks. My best inventions have come out of humorous side excursions and wild thinking. It forces one to see things in radically new perspectives. I also like to use props and physical things to engage my hands while partaking in animated discussions and role-playing. R&D executives may not approve of such behavior in the labs, as high-priced scientists and engineers engage in what might appear to be sophomoric tomfoolery. But I can provide many stories about highly creative men and women who have engaged in different forms of creative play to gain a badly needed new perspective on a tough problem. Edison valued creative play as much as the late working hours, and in this regard, he was light years ahead of today's creativity gurus. He didn't just publish what came naturally to him. Such different approaches to problem-solving all worked quite effectively with Edison's staff. Their work was often meshed with his in creative excellence. Edison's leadership style brought forth huge dividends. While his name is always on the patents and sometimes shared with others, his dedicated staff's work and contributions are indelibly stamped there. As Edison's Menlo Park and West Orange labs took on diverse and more complex projects, the old man could not be in all places at once. Had Edison not instilled his special brand of magic into the workday, things would have turned out quite differently. I maintain his business strategy was and is the hallmarks of a true leader, teaching others to be leaders and thinkers. Edison's incredible staff worked all night, even when he was away on business. Did this boys' club take its toll on Edison and his staff's marriages? Yes, without a doubt. Did he create things that were incredibly important to our modern lives? You bet. Was Edison a slave driver or a leader? I think we already know the answer to that. Having worked in an R&D department in a Fortune 500 company for almost 40 years, I can personally attest that research project managers across the world would give their right arms to be able to instill in their staffs what Edison did in his. Maybe that is why he is such a tough act to follow. The R&D Legacy. Edison Stakes Out the Future. Edison takes inventions from a freelance art form and he transforms it into a scientific and commercially based enterprise. He fuses, not always successfully, invention and market thrust to unleash a repeatable process we recognize as innovation, the very essence of progress, the cardiovascular system of modern capitalism. Edison gives us the keys to the kingdom, the equation to endlessly perpetuate the Industrial Revolution of the late 19th century. He showed us that we are in the driver's seat and we have the power to keep the cornucopia of new products rolling. It is all up to us how far we can take this revolution, limited only by our vision, hard work, and desire. The ability to advance our civilization is no longer limited by our resources, but by our minds and our processes. Edison frees us from such limitations by teaching us to combine knowledge, technology, experience, teamwork, and old-fashioned fire in the belly to succeed in the R&D lab. He boldly talked about his R&D lab as an invention factory and implied it is something we have absolute control over, something we are able to speed up or slow down. Edison envisioned a society where inventions follow rapidly on the heels of other inventions, with technical men who must practice continuous learning and be ready to meet the challenge. It's why he placed libraries in his research lab and created a place where he could feed the flames of knowledge, invention, and technology. Many of America's great companies went on to establish their own versions of Edison's R&D labs, and it had a profound impact on both invention and the pace at which new changes would take place. Here are some of the country's great R&D labs and the dates that they were formed. Edison, Menlo Park, 1876, West Orange, 1887. Johnson & Johnson, 1891. National Starch, 1895. General Electric, 1885, Westinghouse, 1904, Campbell Soup, 1939, Hoffman LaRoche, 1929, Union Carbide, 1925, DuPont, 1903, Merck, 1891, Benjamin Moore, 1904, Exxon, 1919, Allied Signal, 1943, Bell Labs, 1925, Mobil, 1925, Nabisco, 1958, Engelhard, 1920, and RCA, 1920. Today, technology-based Fortune 500 companies contain robust R&D labs aimed at turning their corporate knowledge and inventions into economic engines for their companies. Every year, U.S. companies, universities, and government labs conduct nearly $500 billion worth of research and development, R&D. R&D is synonymous with growth and corporate wealth. Consider that formalized invention in America begins with the Constitution empowering Congress to create a patent office in 1792. It takes until 1935 for the 2 millionth patent to be issued, 143 years. Along comes Edison and his ideas about team invention and team-based problem-solving, and the world of patents changes radically. Consider this. The 2 millionth patent was issued in 1935. The 4 millionth patent was issued in 1976. The 6 millionth patent was issued in 1999. The 8 millionth patent was issued in 2011. Since 1935, 6 of the 8 million total patents are issued, 75% of all patents. The pace of patent submissions and issues are radically accelerating. Not only that, but the doubling time is decreasing, signifying that exponential growth is occurring. Think about this. Going from 0 to 2 million patents took 143 years. Going from 2 to 4 million patents took 41 years. Going from 4 to 8 million patents took 35 years. Such a blistering pace takes a heavy toll on new businesses, placing their feet on an innovation treadmill, with product shelf life also succumbing to shorter and shorter times. In 1960, a product's useful shelf life was about 10 years. Today, with computerization and intelligence built into our products, useful shelf life might encompass just a few months. We must invent faster and more efficiently just to keep pace with the industrial race to global competitiveness. America is not alone anymore. Many other countries are reaching for the stars and dreaming of ever-increasing living standards, understanding well what Edison was talking about with his R&D laboratories. Edison intended his invention message for everyone who might be interested. The Galactic Library, the Internet, is open 24/7, 365, and someone is always in it or on it, reading, learning, creating, and innovating. The competition is always awake. The Legacy of Edison R&D Labs. Here is a listing of the key concepts Edison embodied in his early R&D lab innovation. Multiplexing his time across a variety of projects was possible only if he carefully planned his work out first and then followed through. His men built the prototypes, but he and they tinkered them to perfection. Interdisciplinary problem-solving teams, highly focused on specific, commercially relevant problems. Setting goals for his teams to meet, such as a major invention every 3 months and a minor one every 10 days. Realizing that putting the right people on teams was just as important as picking the right problems to solve. Keeping careful lab notebooks to preserve ideas and intellectual property. Integrating a library into his labs to provide access to information. Keeping stock and materials on hand to foster rapid prototyping of new ideas. Sharing invention rights and royalties with team members. Using humor, jokes, and team spirit to create a cohesive group of researchers. Move around among projects at hand if a mental block set in to stymie progress. And maximize synergy and cross-cutting technologies. Edison's lessons continue to endure today. Nancy Elliott Edison, Rescuing Thomas. Introduction. Surely Thomas Edison was the man who gave us a great deal of our modern life. It was an incredible run of accomplishment, all for a man who had but a very brief school education. Here is the real story about Edison and his mother's ability to influence and harness his great mental capabilities. Little is known about this quiet woman who, in her own loving way, gave us the man who gave us our modern way of life. If young Edison was in our schools today, we might have reached the same conclusion that his teacher did. Something was not quite right about little Tom. He always had lots of questions, little interest in traditional schooling methods and memorization, a tendency to be dreamy and preoccupied, and was always drawing pictures, diagrams, and sketches. Perhaps we would put him in a special education class, or worse yet, we might medicate the little fellow if we thought his behavior disturbed others or hampered what we felt was his normal course for development. In the early 1850s, his teacher told his mother that her youngster was addled, that his brain was incapable of learning, that maybe he was even retarded. His large head seemed to add to his predicament in the simple schoolmaster's eyes. That little town schoolhouse was not equipped to handle this strange little boy. Young Tom did not fit into the educational mold. Nancy Edison and Young Tom. Outraged at what she heard from the local schoolmaster, Edison's mother was adamant in her rebuttal. Obviously, the teacher knew little about her child. Also a trained teacher, Nancy Edison thankfully assumed Tom's homeschooled education. Her first order of business was to instill discipline into the lad's thinking. To use his higher-order thinking skills properly, she needed to prepare his mind. Edison was not happy about doing things he did not like, but in the long term, chance does favor the prepared mind. So his homeschooling began with some basics. Edison's mom could be a taskmaster when necessary. She and her husband Samuel were avid readers. They immediately imbued their son with a love of reading. This love became Edison's lifelong habit. By age 10, he was already deep into the classics of literature, like Gibbon's The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, and many other weighty tomes. As well as literature, Edison enjoyed reading poetry and prose, and history, science, technology, engineering, and chemistry books. He recited favorite poems throughout his life. Edison's love of reading and learning played a crucial role in his success in later years. By his teenage years, Tom was already roaming the Midwest as an itinerant top-grade telegrapher, earning a respectable wage and a reputation as an electromechanical guru. He mastered telegraphy by first building his own telegraph equipment and teaching himself Morse code. His determination to find answers to his curiosity and the solution to problems were other key factors in Edison's success. All the while Edison was roaming, he was reading at local libraries, and he kept abreast of technological advances, crystallizing his grasp of invention. Such learning habits remained hallmarks throughout his life. Edison's research library in West Orange, New Jersey, was filled with tens of thousands of volumes and served as his main technical and scientific reference center. He also had a large supply of reference books in his home living room in Glenmont. Edison realized this need for information was the fundamental bedrock for any serious invention efforts. According to Edison, you cannot invent well unless you know what has already been accomplished, what has been done, and what is needed. Today, any respectable national R&D lab is intimately tied to a corporate library or dedicated outside information networks. In fact, our internet started as an electronic network where collegiate and defense researchers could trade knowledge. In an indirect way, Edison helped usher in the information revolution we now experience. Certainly, his invention of the electric power system provides the energy to keep that internet awake and functional for all of us. Nancy Edison allowed her young son to explore and learn on his own, pursuing his beloved sketches and ideas, delving into what interested him. His mother allowed him to build his own little laboratory in the basement of their modest home. She was tolerant of the smells from his experiments and occasional explosions, cautioning her not-so-tolerant husband that Tom really did know about chemistry, a subject he came back to again and again throughout his life. A mother's hard work pays off. Another of Edison's famous habits was keeping notebooks, something he started at a very early age. In them, he dutifully recorded his work, sketches, and impressions. This natural repository of Edison's work turned out to be a national treasure chest. He left us 4,000 notebooks filled with his ideas and experiments, a valuable resource today's scholars mine. Keeping notebooks was another area where Nancy Edison allowed young Tom to stretch his wings, using his natural ability to sketch and draw to express himself in the best way he knew how. This particular habit was incredibly useful to Edison, later serving as an inspiration to all inventors who followed and were influenced by him. Edison's codification and documentation of work in progress has become the mainstay of any inventor and the subject of legal precedents, especially when patent rights are questioned. Here we glimpse Edison's mind in progress, his phenomenal ability to see the whole problem and the individual parts at the same time. These notebooks are Edison's magic, leading directly to his ideas about setting up invention factories by using physicists, chemists, engineers, metallurgists, machinists, mathematicians, and laboratory technicians' interdisciplinary skills to solve problems, all working together for a common goal. The ability to see both the parts and the whole problem at once gave us the electric light and the entire electric utility infrastructure to serve it. Edison saw the need for electric illumination, as well as the process to serve all those light bulbs at the same time. He created the product, the light bulb, and the process, the generation and distribution systems, to make it all work. Edison repeated this process again with varying degrees of success, with recorded sound and motion pictures. Epilogue. No wonder young Tom's time in formal school setting was so traumatic. His mental wiring was different. He was thinking more in pictures and diagrams than simply words and text. I shudder to think of how many other highly creative people suffer the same fate today in our one-size-fits-all schools. For the rest of his life, Edison railed against modern education, thinking it stultifying. He championed the kind of learning his mother gave him, and the worldly adventures and self-determination that he had experienced. His success told his story, and he stuck to the methods that worked for him. Today, modern brain-based research is telling us what Nancy Edison already knew in her heart. Self-learning is just as important as book learning. And she had the courage and conviction to allow young Tom to falter, advance, and think at his own pace. This research is also casting severe criticism on the traditional educational approaches we still stubbornly cling to in our schools. Individual learning styles are paramount to getting the most from each student. Humans are wired differently and are able to learn differently. So why aren't teachers taught to use and allowed to use different teaching styles and given the necessary resources to do so? There is increasing truth to having smaller classrooms so individual teaching styles can be better managed. Perhaps the 50-minute classroom period should be expanded so students can do more learning in teams, exploring the rich interconnections between subject matter. The closest thing we have to what recent brain-based research is telling us is technology education, a content-rich educational process that started in the mid-1980s. And most recently, we have STEM educational principles that are becoming quite popular. It uses the entire curricula as its basis, teaching students to explore both problem-solving's interdisciplinary and multidimensional nature, and it encourages spending time at the beginning to define the problem at the outset. Taking time to think was also something Thomas Edison did with a passion. He took the time to think through his problems, not simply rush to cobble something together in his lab. He read through available literature about possible technology he could use and how others might have tried to solve similar problems. Edison carefully planned out his methods and approaches to solving problems. To him, experimental failure was just as important as success. Both technology education and STEM thrive on head-in-hands participation and team-based activities. Edison also possessed stubbornness about dealing with too much mathematics. He seemed not to trust people who placed an overemphasis on it, perhaps fearing they could lose the physical feel for the problem at hand by abstracting it. Was Edison simply poor at math and hiding a weakness? Certainly, as his businesses grew and technology became more complex, he needed to hire college men trained in both math and the classic sciences, but somehow he never could lose that distrust of mathematics. Without a doubt, Edison was a tinkerer and felt better when in control of his innate feelings about a technology or a problem. He trusted his intuition, experience, and empirical methods. If I were to sum up Mama Edison's advice to young Thomas, it would be the following. 1. Don't fear failure. Keep trying and learn from it. 2. Not everything of value comes from books. Experience the world. 3. Read from all literature, not just your favorite subject. And 4. Always strive to learn new things. Sounds like great advice for our children today. Mina Miller Edison, a valuable partner. Introduction. Mina Miller Edison, 1865 to 1947, was Thomas Edison's second wife. He married her in 1886 after the death of his first wife, Mary Stillwell Edison, in 1884. Mary had been a woman of simple means, a worker in Edison's Newark factory. In contrast, Mina was poised, the daughter of parents of culture and good upbringing in Akron, Ohio. Mina's father, Louis, invented farm machinery, and he had much of the inventive spirit in common with his soon-to-be son-in-law, Thomas Edison. As it would turn out, Mina would become the daughter, wife, and mother of inventors. Her son, Theodore Edison, would also take up an inventive life, although Teddy would never achieve the acclaim his father enjoyed. Louis Miller played a key role in establishing the famous retreat Chautauqua in upper western New York State. Such exposure to people of stature and mixing with highly educated folks helped groom Mina for the societal role she would later play with a world-renowned husband. Mina and Tom. When Thomas and Mina married, she became the matriarch of a huge 23-room mansion in West Orange near Edison's new and soon-to-be legendary West Orange Laboratories. Glenmont, Edison's 13-acre estate, included the home, Glenmont, a barn, greenhouse, garage, farm animals, and tended grounds. As a wedding gift, Edison bought Mina the magnificent Queen Anne-styled Victorian mansion. Mina was 19 and Thomas 39, and along with Edison came three children by his first marriage, Marion, Thomas Jr., and William. Marion, the oldest, was already 12, just 7 years younger than Mina, making her job as a young mother that much more difficult. Mina would then have three children of her own, Madeline, Charles, and Theodore, in that order. Unlike Mary, Mina was up to the challenge of an already famous husband. While she adored him, as did Mary, this adoration was not overwhelming. Mina had been around famous people all her life, and she was raised to take charge of situations. She became a loving wife as well as Edison's business partner, and she also inherited his burgeoning reputation and public acclaim. Mina handled Edison's very busy social calendar, dinner parties, and public relations so he could remain doing what he did best, inventing breakthrough technologies and industries. She rose to the demanding rigors of her husband's fame and busy schedule. Many nights would pass with Edison spending long hours at the lab or personally supervising critical work at job sites. The long hours were tough on Mina and the children, but she persisted in protecting her husband's privacy and keeping his social calendar in order. Mina was an important asset to Edison's business, his de facto public relations department, as I like to consider it. The mansion hosted many famous guests, such as Presidents Hoover and Wilson, the kings of Sweden and Siam, famous conservationist John Burroughs, Maria Montessori, the famed educator, Helen Keller, and industrialists Henry Ford, Harvey Firestone, and George Eastman. The list also included Orville Wright, Charles Lindbergh, and a variety of others, including famed musical artists that Edison had recorded for his phonograph records. Against this backdrop of fame and notoriety, Mina entertained, brought up her children, managed the large estate, and carved out a meaningful life of her own. In addition, Mina became a potent force for the conservation movement, then picking up momentum. The rapid growth of cities and their encroachment on pristine areas was a major concern. Such men as Burroughs, Muir, and others greatly influenced Mina's thinking, and she most likely had input to the great movement to preserve wild areas, very much in the spirit that helped establish our system of national parks. Also an avid birdwatcher and horticulturist, Mina transformed Glenmont's fertile grounds into a botanical wonderland. She planted trees, shrubs, and plant species from around the world there. Even today, the air around Glenmont is very much alive with the smells and aromas of blooming plants and trees. Mina also generously gave of her talents to the surrounding communities, working tirelessly on various social, educational, religious, and community causes for the benefits of citizens great and small. She did her best to give back to her community, and in doing so, Mina created a solid reputation of citizenship, while at the same time shedding light upon her husband's business. Her philanthropy was well known. Mina had a most beautiful philosophy about education, maintaining that only through a traditional and classic liberal education do we make citizens ready for the wonderful democracy that we enjoy. She probably formed her lifelong interest in learning, studying foreign cultures, and giving her talents back to the community early in her youth, with her father's founding of Chautauqua, the beautiful outdoor retreat on the southern shore of Lake Erie. There, with Bishop Vincent of Akron, Ohio, Mina's father, Lewis Miller, established a religious retreat that emphasized worldly learning and fostered continuing learning for participants to better understand the people and ideas in the world around them. Every summer for most of her life, Mina retreated to the bucolic splendor of this lakeside oasis for mental and spiritual rejuvenation. This state of continuous learning meshed well with Edison's constant quest to learn and study his own interests. In the big world of new ideas and creative thinking, she and Thomas were in perfect harmony. Lovely Glenmont is a warm home filled with books and opportunities for learning. Today, Chautauqua remains a place of learning and understanding, whether for religious or other purposes. It is a name that describes both a philosophy and a geographical location. It is an invention of spirit and mind no less important than Edison's physical manifestations of technology. A loving partnership. Thomas and Mina's marriage was a loving partnership, even if Thomas was often away from home for days at a time. She came to understand his greatness and was able to share him with the world. Mina also shielded him from the distractions and annoyances that could sap his creative energies. Two desks still sit in Glenmont's upstairs living room, one for Thomas and the other for Mina, signifying that both worked hard and in close proximity. Like the invention process going on at Edison Labs every day, their marriage was a partnership, one of mutual respect, purpose, and love. Had Mina not provided such a nurturing environment for creative Thomas to dwell within, we may not have enjoyed or been delayed in realizing many of the advances he achieved. Today, Thomas and Mina rest side by side in a peaceful memorial garden area behind their beautiful home. The entire estate has been lovingly preserved for visitors from all over the world to enjoy and reflect upon. Thousands of visitors tour Glenmont every year, marveling at the profound work done here by both husband and wife. About the author. Harry T. Roman holds 12 U.S. patents, has received numerous engineering, invention, and teaching awards, and has published more than 550 scientific papers, articles, monographs, and books. In 1999, the New Jersey Technology Education and Engineering Association named Roman a Distinguished Technology Educator. In 2005, the New Jersey Inventors Hall of Fame distinguished Harry with an Inventor of the Year Award for his application of mobile robots in hazardous work environments. In 1996, IEEE honored Roman with the Meritorious Achievement Award for developing continuing education products for IEEE members. Again, in 2006, IEEE honored him with an Outstanding Engineer Award. Roman has also received IEEE's Region 1 Excellence in Teaching Award in 2015. Every month, more than 250,000 educators read his feature articles appearing in various national publications. In PSE&G's R&D group, where Roman worked for 36 years, he directed and consulted on over $100 million worth of projects and programs and taught graduate-level R&D project management courses at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT. Throughout Roman's engineering career, he worked with schools around the state, bringing the excitement of real-world problem-solving into the classroom. Retired since 2006, Roman has published more than 70 resource books, math card games, and science kits for teachers, products valued for their head-in-hands approach to teaching creativity, invention, STEM, engineering, and alternate energy topics in the classroom. Roman now spends many hours in the classroom working with teachers and students in West Orange, Montclair, and Livingston, conducting special student project team challenges. He is an advisor and author to the Edison Innovation Foundation and docent and special lecturer at the Thomas Edison National Historical Park in West Orange. Roman also admits to writing and publishing poetry and short stories. For the past 3 years, he has been teaching graduate school at Montclair State University in their teaching college, where he co-teaches a unique course about applying STEM techniques in the classroom. This has been Thomas Edison, Man of the Millennium, Volume 2, Lifetime Partnerships, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lukabaugh.